Okay, this is talking with Jean Heidman on 8th July 76 at Meudon. Now, can you tell me a little bit about your educational background? You said it was actually
my
engineer.
Education, so that was an engineering diploma in an engineering school in Paris. But at the same time, I made the studies at the University of Physics and Mathematics in order to do research at least. So at the end of that engineering school, I tried for 1 week in a factory, but I didn't like it. Then I went to a well-known cosmic ray laboratory at that time, that was Le Prince Ringuet laboratory, because cosmic rays, that was sounding to me like something coming from space. I was always interested in astronomy as a boy, so I went there.
I see.
And then I worked there for 12 years or so. And
this is beginning when?
What?
When did this 12-year period begin?
It began 1947. And then I worked with measurements of cosmic rays with nuclear emulsions in balloons. I tried with rockets also, and also I made some theoretical nuclear physics about interaction of nucleons and nuclei. I worked with Hans Bethe, for instance, with N.F. Mott also.
Which institute was this?
It was in École Polytechnique in Paris, with Le Prince Ringuet laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the big accelerating machine came into use, this laboratory more and more shifted to these machines, and they did not use any more cosmic rays. So I heard about radio astronomy at that time. Then I heard that in Meudon Observatory there was a nice group starting with Denis.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked to shift here. So I came here about 1959
I see.
In Meudon Observatory.
Did you know about radio astronomy during the 1950s?
Not much. Just a little, because about cosmic rays, I had an idea for finding a way to accelerate cosmic rays.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was to use the relative motion of two galaxies, and in particular to consider our galaxy as a magnet or a magnetic field in rotation. And then while rotating this magnetic field, it would make rotate the interstellar medium, nearby intergalactic medium. Mm-hmm. And then this medium will sweep the Magellanic clouds, and by sweeping the Magellanic cloud, it would be able to accelerate cosmic rays up to 10 to the 19th electron volts.
Hmm. Did you publish this?
Yes, I published that.
Where was it?
Oh, it was published at a symposium in Guanajuato, in Mexico, a cosmic ray symposium in 1958, I think, Mexican state.
International group sponsored this meeting?
That was an international meeting of cosmic rays, and it was in Guanajuato, Guanajuato in Mexico state. And I worked with Alvin about this thing in order to see how it could work. Okay.
Right.
So I had some interest in radio astronomy by this way, you see.
Right.
But then when I came here, I met Professor Oort at a meeting, and he told me, "Oh, come to Leiden to start radio astronomy with us to have a good start." So this is why I went to the Dwingelo radio telescope, the 25 meter.
What year was that?
It was 1960. Yes.
And now you say a group was starting up here.
Yes.
Now there had been a solar group for a long time.
It was a solar group for a long time under the leadership. Under the leadership of Denis.
Right.
And then about a little before 1960, they started to use two Würzburg reflectors to make interferometry on a long baseline in Nancy, a 1.5 kilometer long baseline. in the continuum near 21 centimeter line to study double radio galaxies.
Right. That was the first non-solar work that
yes,
was done.
Yes, 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 yes. And at that time, Leuke was working on that, and I worked with him also on double sources. The first one, Cygnus, Cygnus source, and some more also. But then.
But before you did that work at Nancy, you worked in Holland, you said?
Yes, so I went twice in Holland for these measurements. And Professor Oort proposed me to observe external galaxies with a 21 centimeter line.
Mm-hmm.
And the one which, so if you were selected, and the one which was the most difficult to observe was Messier 51, because we had to integrate hours and hours. But we found a signal, a good signal, and mm-hmm. we could get the width of the line, the total amount of hydrogen and so on. And it took 8 years to have again measurements of this galaxy with better radio telescopes in much shorter time.
Sure.
And the results were the same. So. And
so who were you working with in Holland?
I was alone there. I told you about this blueprint you see. It is the same here.
This is BAN?
BAN, yes.
Number 506.
It should be written somewhere.
Just number 506, okay.
506, yes. Right. Page so and so, yes.
Okay, and this was about M51.
Yes, so that was a signal, you see, the signal here. So I tried to fit a very simple rectangle line by least square with a method which we use here in my group for years now for statistical analysis of the results.
Right.
And here it is the first time integral properties of galaxies with a 21 centimeter line are compared versus type, morphological type, you see.
Right.
And the first quantity was quantity of hydrogen mass divided by intrinsic luminosity, which is independent of distance. So that were the first results on the trend of increasing of such a ratio of MH over L. Mm-hmm. with a morphological type.
You had 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 galaxies.
Yes, not
right.
more, not more.
Right.
And the only small one was really Messier 51,
mm-hmm.
which is here. The others are Andromeda and so on.
Right.
Larger galaxies.
Now,
so that was a year 61, maybe, I don't remember. So it is just at the end of the period you are considering.
Right. Well, but then you came back to Nancy.
Yes. Then.
In what year now?
Yes. So I was in Nancy. So I worked with Würzburg in interferometer with Leuke on double sources. Then after a few years, the construction of the big radio telescope started there. Then I proposed a program for extragalactic research.
Well, we're going a little fast. Let's go back to the double radio sources. What were you trying to find out?
But that was mainly Leuke's work. That was his thesis work.
Mm-hmm.
So I just joined him to work with him. And the main result of this research was to find the double structure of radio sources. That double structure was a very frequent phenomenon.
Right.
And we had some positions also. And oh yes, I remember in 1961, I tried to make optical identifications also for the first time in France with a 2 meter telescope in the Alps. So I had a few positions from radio and I went there to take pictures and I took a picture of the field which is called 3C273.
Yes.
And I had my rectangle box for the position, and there was a big star there, and a very faint galaxy somewhere, so I said maybe the identification is this faint galaxy.
Right.
But for the star, I did not see the small jet because the telescope was not well aligned.
I see.
There was some coma. And the faint jet of the quasar was not visible on the plate.
Right.
That was the first years also of that optical telescope, so it was not well aligned.
How large was the error box?
Oh, I don't remember, but that is published somewhere also.
I see. This identification is published in Annales d'Astrophysique.
Yes, something like that. Yes, I could find it for you.
That's interesting.
Yes.
Now, how did your work compare with the work being done in Owens Valley, which was just starting then with structure of radio sources, right? Was it about the same time, or was it a little bit later?
I think Owens Valley was later. No,
it was later. Well, I'm not positive exactly which year. You were doing this in what year?
I tell you, 60, 62. Mm-hmm. Yes,
I think it's about the same time. So you were not aware anyway of them working on the same
same
sort of problems.
No. It was started independently. Yes.
Because Malt.
Oh yes, Owens Valley gave results about 1962. I remember.
Right. Maltby and Moffat.
Yes.
Had some early work on double sources also.
Yes. Oh yes, and on the international level, their work was better known than the work from here.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, I remember. So, yes.
Okay, so you worked on the double sources, but then you say, the large antenna began to be built.
Yes, but that was a few years later, after 1962 then.
So okay, maybe you could tell me a little bit about the large antenna though. Who was the person that was mainly in charge of it, and how did it become decided to?
Yes, so the person in charge mainly was Denis, and with a close collaboration of Leque, Bloom, Steinberg, all the group which was already formed for the solar studies there,
right.
Leroux also, so they worked to Arsac also, they worked to build this instrument.
Right.
And it was built a 20% part of it first.
Just two
just
panels.
One fifth.
Right.
Two panels instead of 10 and so on.
Right.
In order to first to get the money and to test it and to see whether it would work or not.
Okay, well, I'm going to be talking with Steinberg, so I'll ask
yes,
him.
Yes, so he will tell you.
Ask him about
yes, yes, so ask him. He will tell you how it was for the construction of his thing.
Right.
I did not take part in the construction of this thing, but I took part in the astrophysical program for it for extragalactic work.
Once it began, and that started when? That was later.
So much later. So first it started in continuum at 21 centimeter. I should say 1964, maybe. Yes, maybe 1964. And then the continuum started 2 or 3 years later still.
The line started.
Yes, the line.
In 67 or something.
Yes, yes. And in 1965, I started to make a group here to work on extragalactic galaxies with a line, 21 centimeter line.
On normal galaxies. Why did you decide to go to normal galaxies?
First, to the closest one because of sensitivity problems. So the closest one are normal because the peculiar are rare, so on the average they are far.
Right, but they're stronger though in their radio emissions.
Ah, but not in 21 centimeter line.
Not in the hydrogen line.
Not in the line.
So what was it about the hydrogen line that made you be interested in that?
I was interested in the line because it gave kinematical information on galaxies. And in particular, one important point is that I thought that from the width of the line, at the start, from the width you can get an indication on the mass, total mass of the galaxy.
Right.
Because you get the width is twice the rotational velocity in nice cases and so on. So you get what we call the indicative total mass, which is just multiplying the photometric diameter by the square of the width of the line.
Right.
Mixing optical and 21 centimeter line data, but each parameter is a function of type, so the product is also a function of time, and then you get an indication of total mass also, of mass.
So there was much more information in the line, and that was...
Yes, that was really because of that, yes.
Right.
And you get the total amount of gas, which is important for star formations and so on. Yes. So all these years we worked with this group on the study of galaxies with the line. And in particular, we had not the possibility to have many channels, you see, for the receiver. 15 was a maximum.
Right.
So I asked for the channels to be wide enough in order to cover
One galaxy.
Well, yeah. One galaxy, yeah. In velocity at the time, so that was also with not much definition in velocity, but that was enough and it was well adapted.
Right.
So
right.
We had many, many galaxies, and after the normal, then the sensitivity of the receiver was increased, so we could go look farther away. So we started to look at peculiar galaxies, and we were the first to detect the Cepheid galaxy, Haro galaxy, the compact Zwicky galaxy, and Markarian galaxies.
Mm-hmm.
All
mm-hmm.
these were the first detections that were made here. Yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Not at all.
That ends the interview with Jean Heidmann at Meudon on 8th July 76.